This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is singer, songwriter, and pianist Rufus Wainwright. He's just released his second CD, which is called Poses. In the New York Times, Bob Morris described Poses as full of fiercely melodic songs, both upbeat and languorous, that catalog the yearnings of the young, urban, and ambitious. Most of his songs, in some way, are warnings about the dangers of seduction. Wainwright is gay and started his career out of the closet. Music critic Ann Powers recently described him as the post-liberation era's first pop star. Wainwright started performing as a child, singing with his mother, Kate McGarrigle, and his aunt, Anna, who performed together as the McGarrigle sisters. They perform a mix of parlor songs, traditional songs, and original material. Rufus Wainwright's father is singer-songwriter Loudon Wainwright, whose songs are often satirical ballads about relationships and contemporary life. We invited Rufus to join us at the piano, but let's start with a track from his new CD. This is a song about innocuous and not-so-innocuous vices called Cigarettes and Chocolate Milk.
Cigarettes and chocolate milk, these are just a couple of my cravings. Everything, it seems, I like's a little bit stronger, a little bit thicker, a little bit harmful for me if I should buy jelly beans. Have to eat them all in just one sitting. Everything, it seems, I like's a little bit sweeter, a little bit fatter, a little bit harmful for me.
Rufus Wainwright from his new CD, Poses. I asked him to share some of his earliest memories growing up in a family of musicians.
Well, I mean, I remember, my first crib was a guitar case.
Seriously?
Yeah, it was. It was my first crib. There's actually a picture of me when I first came back from the hospital, and they didn't have a crib, and so they put me in my dad's guitar case. And I remember, I think one of the earliest, I mean, the big thing in my family was that my grandmother on my mother's side was very, really liked to be entertained. And what's interesting is that my grandmother on my mother's side, as I said, was 45 when she had my mother. And so therefore, generational-wise, she'd kind of skipped the whole, like, listening to records thing. Like, she was still from sort of a parlor, you know, or whatever, like music hall songs and vaudeville. She was more from the vaudeville, like the 30s and the 20s. That was really her era. So singing around the house and being able to play the piano and stuff was very natural to her, and she really bestowed that upon my mother. And we really, you know, had to entertain her a lot because I think she actually always wanted to be, she wanted to be a ballet dancer at one point, but she was like one of 17 children and never really had, and I think she sort of put some of that desire into her children and her grandchildren.
How much did you hear of your father's music when you were growing up?
A lot.
I ask that because your parents divorced or separated when you were about three. So,
yeah.
And you were with your mother.
Yeah, yeah. No, we heard a lot. I mean, we had a lot of kind of late nights of listening to the old records. And my parents split up was very, very intense. Mostly because they were both very, very creative people, and they were very, very competitive, and very, very, it was just a sort of a, you know, a crash of two very talented people. But in the end, they both really loved each other's music and both really respected each other artistically. So we still listen to, you know, my mother still put on a lot of his old records and stuff.
Must have been hard as a kid to watch that.
Yeah, no, it was hard. I mean, I'm happy they got divorced, because it would have, I'm sure it would have been a lot harder. But it was, as soon as the songs came on and, you know, everybody stopped bitching about, you know, each other, there was sort of a reverent moment.
Your father wrote some songs directly about you,
yeah,
including Rufus is a Tit Man, which is about you as an infant.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel like your privacy was being violated by one of your father's songs?
No, I was usually, you know, telling everybody that that song's about me, and you know, yelling out, play the song about me. I didn't care what it was about or what it had to do with. As long as it was about me, it was fine.
When did you start writing songs yourself?
It's funny. I started writing... Before I started writing songs, I wrote operas. I don't think they were very good, but I used to write these little operas and little classical pieces. I don't know, I when I was a kid. I really thought I was this little Mozart character. So I did that, and then as I went to music school and started taking piano lessons and getting into that whole thing and realized that you actually have to practice and learn how to read and learn how to, you know, dissect fugues, I sort of backed into songwriting because it was a lot easier. It's funny how you can write operas when you don't know anything about, you know, music or the actual, you know, science of it. So I started with that, and then you know, instead of practicing my scales and my, you know, tone stuff, I started writing songs, and therefore I failed out of music school.
Could you play one of the early songs that you
wrote? One of my early songs?
I should mention you're at the piano.
Yeah. Let's see. This song is called Liberty Cabbage. This is sort of the first. This is the first song I ever wrote.
How old were you about?
I wasn't that. I was pretty old, actually. I was 17. Sometimes I think you're trying to kill me with your stars and stripes, and sometimes your liberty cabbage goes dry, but still your arms are strong and your blood runs furious inside. Sometimes your liberty cabbage goes dry. We'll keep it at that. It goes on and on. But it's sort of, you know, sort of the first melding of the classical into pop sort of for me was that song.
Do you still perform that?
Yeah, every once in a while. It's a great sort of... I'm sort of not giving it all away because I do want it to have to come out on record like as the full thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but it was the first time I wrote it. I wrote it when I was really sort of coming. Actually, I was maybe about 14. Actually, I can't remember, but I was coming out of the closet for myself, and it was kind of a dark period because it was mid '80s, and I just went to boarding school, and I wrote it at boarding school when I first went there, and it was sort of this. The school itself is in Millbrook, New York, which is up in Dutchess County, and it was just the most beautiful place in the world. And it was sort of that beautiful America pastoral kind of thing, you know, coupled with, you know, whatever my dark personality at the time.
So did coming out coincide with starting to write songs?
Yeah, pretty much. I fell in love. That was what kind of happened. I mean, I'd sort of written that thing, and then I sort of started really, you know, investigating the terrain of gay life, and then I, you know, the songs came from that mostly.
When did you realize that you really wanted to be a musician, to perform?
I have no memory of that. I was constantly performing as a kid. I mean, I basically Kind of. I mean, I had kind of a funny upbringing because, for instance, my mother would. When I was very young, I wanted to be in Broadway. You know, I was really into Broadway musicals, and I would go to visit my dad a lot and go see Annie and all of those things. And actually, my mother told me, I was a big Annie fanatic, and my mom told me that sometimes boys play Annie, like they dress her up, they dress them up, and they. And then, so for a few years, I thought I could be Annie, which was kind of disturbing. But and also, you know, I was a big Wizard of Oz fanatic too. I was really into it. My favorite toy when I was a kid was an apron that I called my put it on, and I would dance around and do shows and stuff. So I can't remember never ever not wanting to do it.
My guest is singer-songwriter Rufus Wainwright. His new CD is called Poses. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Rufus Wainwright, and he has a new CD called Poses. I'm going to ask you to do another song that you wrote, and this is a song called Beauty Mark.
Yeah.
It's on your first CD. Tell us about the song.
I wrote this. This I wrote after writing many sort of long and depressing things. And my mom said, oh, your stuff is so long and depressing. So I kind of wrote this song to shut her up.
And what's it about?
It's about her. In a loving way.
That's good. I really like that song. When you started performing, you were already out, and you were out, you know, in the music world.
Yeah.
When you started performing, a lot of performers who are gay either don't come out, or they come out after they've established themselves a bit and feel more confident that coming out won't hurt them.
Right.
In their public image or in the public's willingness to buy their records or see their concerts. Was that a big decision for you, or was that just something that was really obvious?
I think it was something that I basically, well, there was a couple of reasons. One is that I was honestly very worried about if I didn't come out about it, if I wasn't honest about it, that somehow I had this nightmare of a contractual thing, you know, where I mean, I was, you know, it's scary getting signed by a major label and by a big company, and I just didn't want there to be any way that they could, you know, twist my arm about it. So that was just sort of my major fear, and also.
But what were you afraid of exactly?
I was kind of afraid. I don't know. It was a weird fear of. I think a lot of it had to do with, like, if I got sick or something, like if I got AIDS or something, which I don't have, thank God. But that somehow. The record company could, like, you know, do something weird to me. I just feel like, I don't know what it was. There was a lot of sort of paranoia when I first got signed, just because, whatever. It's a spooky thing to do. And so I just wanted to be as open and as honest and as public and as possible, because it was just, you know, I just didn't want to somehow be under control by them or something.
And did anyone...
It's just that my mother told me a lot of horror stories about people who weren't allowed to, you know, but people not being allowed to do things and their careers being ruined because they all of a sudden came out. And
so you wanted to start as
start as ruined, and then work my way up from there.
Right? Did anyone at your record company say bad idea?
Well,
go back
was,
into the closet.
Nobody cared at all. But then once the press started coming out and they saw that I was actually as honest about it and as forthright, there was some people's in their opinion. They said, you know, you just shouldn't talk about it, or just say that you like girls too.
But I think in the press, it's really been. A kind of positive thing.
Yeah,
for
no,
you.
Was, it was.
The press
was,
really
was,
praised
it,
you for.
Yeah, no,
for
no,
being
they liked it, but there were certain executives and certain people in the company itself who were very put off by it at sometimes. And I have to say honestly, I think that there are, you know, I do, you know, it's weird. I mean, I don't know. I think some people are still put off by it sometimes, but maybe I don't know. It's such a hard thing to measure.
If it's not getting too personal, you. Came of age and came out during the AIDS era,
yeah.
which is
still happening.
Yeah, I know exactly. But it's a terrifying time to start sexual life.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you grew up knowing that, you know, unprotected sex could conceivably.
Yeah, no, I thought I was going to die for years. Mm-hmm. I really did. I mean, I'd had sex at a young age, around 14, and I was. I was actually raped.
Oh, no.
Here we go into the personal stuff. it wasn't a serious rape. It was just violated. I was violated, let's say, at kind of a young age, though, you know, I was also looking for trouble. So, and through that, I had had a few sexual encounters at that time, and then after that, I just didn't have sex for about 6 years, which, you know, it's kind of, I was, you know, 14, so it's not, you know, that's kind of normal, maybe, but I did think that for those years, like, every little zit was like Carposis sarcoma, and every, you know, I thought my rings were falling off my fingers all the time, you know, it was pretty horrible, but it was also... You know, it made you think a lot about life and what you want to do.
Did you tell anybody about the rape?
I didn't tell anybody for a long time. No, I mean, I didn't. I didn't. I started more talking about it when I started coming out when I was a little older, like around my early 20s.
So you're carrying around this fear without being able to tell anybody about it.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it wasn't. I don't know if I. It's interesting. I mean, maybe I'm just. It's the way I'm brought up or something. But I was very, you know, I in a weird way turned it around for me. I mean, it was very much. Strangely enough, I mean, it was a tough thing to hold in, but it was also. I kind of thanked God in a little way that I'd had some sort of hard knock with the with sex.
Why?
At that age, just because it got my mind off of it, and it kind of. In a weird way, I think it kind of saved my life in an odd, strange way. Because I don't know, I was pretty when my hormones were raging at a very young age, and I was, you know, I knew what I wanted, and I didn't, and in a weird way, that sort of just calmed me down a little and said, like, you know, you got to, sex is a dangerous thing, and it's a mean world out there, and it sort of sobered me up in a strange way. I mean, it was there was certainly emotional. Ties to that, and that I still deal with, I think. But it was interesting. It was character building.
You haven't written a song about the violation.
No,
I mean, I didn't think
no,
so.
No. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to cash in on it.
No, I wasn't implying that you would. But sometimes the things that really trouble you are also the things that come out, you know, when you write.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting about it, it wasn't so much the rape itself that was hard. I mean, it was more the murderous intentions of at one point. Like, it was very, there was a struggle, and there was one point where the guy threatened to kill me and throw me into the, it was in England, throw me into the, I mean, I'm sorry, I hope my parents don't listen to this. I'm kind of dramatic. I find it quite dramatic.
It's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying. And I, you know, I probably shouldn't talk about it, and I probably should keep it all in there. But I certainly, you know, if I didn't tell anybody else about it, I certainly thought about it a lot and told myself about it in my head.
Rufus Wainwright's new CD is called Poses. He's currently on tour opening for Roxy Music. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with singer-songwriter Rufus Wainwright, who joins us at the piano. He's currently on tour opening for Roxy Music. Wainwright's new CD is called Poses. I'd like you to perform the title song from your new CD. Maybe you could do an excerpt.
Yeah, it's a bit long. Yeah,
but
the songs tend to be quite long.
Before you play it, would you introduce it for us? Tell us a little bit about what inspired the song.
Well, I was living in the Chelsea Hotel and going out a lot and sort of taking advantage of the modicum of fame that I'd gotten from my first record and really trying to gather up experiences for the second, and this song sort of arrived at one point, and it was about sort of it was a combination. It was about certain people and certain and about myself, it became this character of a young guy who comes to the city, you know, bright and fresh and young and smelling like roses and leaves, you know, completely destroyed, which I don't think I. That happened to me, but I saw it happen to a lot of people. And this is the second half of the song. okay.
Reclined amongst these packs of reasons for to smoke the days away into the evenings, all these poses of classical torture ruin my mind. Like a snake in the orchard, I did go from wanting to be someone. Now I'm drunk and wearing flip-flops on Fifth Avenue. Once you've fallen from classical virtue, won't have a soul for to wake up and hold you in the green autumnal park, conducting all the city streets a wondrous chorus, singing all these poses now no longer boyish, made me a man. But who cares what that is? And you said, watch my head about it. Baby, you said, watch my head about it. My head about it. Oh no, oh no. No kidding.
Thank you for doing that. That's Rufus Wainwright at the piano, and that's also the title song from his new CD, Poses. Did you go through a period of that yourself, of feeling like you were trying on personalities or trying out different scenes to see which really fit?
I mean, I really felt like, I'd moved to New York years earlier, mostly during the time when Jeff Buckley was big, actually, when he was playing. And I had a demo tape at that time, and nobody would take it. Like, the club where he was playing, Sinead's, you know, refused my tape 3 times. And he was sort of big, and I hated him, because he was so good looking and so popular. And I sort of retreated at that point back to Montreal to write more and just to get my thing together. I don't think I was ready at that point to do stuff. And then, you know, when I made my first record, blah, 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 you know, everything went well. And then when I arrived back in New York and moved back and moved into the Chelsea and got my piano, I really arrived into the world of artists and bohemians and, you know, Johns and hookers and, you know, of that world. And I really felt all of a sudden like I was allowed this sort of, it's almost like a view of the world, or a kind of seat in the theater, you know, to watch the world. And that's sort of what this album ended up being about, was just some of the things that I saw from that position, from a slightly higher standpoint.
Now, you actually have songs that are in 2 current movies.
Yes.
They're not songs you wrote.
No.
But they're songs that you sing.
Yes.
And there's one in...
Shrek
and...
Le Moulin Rouge.
That's what I was trying to think of. Moulin Rouge. Yeah. What are the songs in each of those?
Well, the one in Shrek is... And this is sort of an example of the glass ceiling I might be hitting. But it's not in the movie when you see Shrek. It's on the soundtrack. They use a John Cale version, and it's a Leonard Cohen song called Hallelujah, which is an amazing song. And I mean, the lines, like, you know, all I ever learned from love was how to shoot at someone who outdrew you, kind of poetry. And then the other song is in Moulin Rouge. It's a French song called Les Esca. It's funny. It's called Complain de la Butte in French. And in English, they're always, it's complain of the butt. Which I always thought was funny.
Would you play an excerpt of the song that you do from Moulin Rouge?
Sure.
La lune tremble, pose un diadème sur tes cheveux rouges. La lune trouche, de gloire éclabousse ton jupon plein trou. La lune trop pâle caresse l'opale de tes yeux blasés. Princesse de la rue, sois la bienvenue dans mon cœur brisé. Les escaliers de la butte.
Yeah, that's bad. Then I screwed up, but it goes like that. It's one of those French songs.
Where's the song from?
It's an amazing song. It was written by Jean Renoir, the filmmaker. Or he wrote the words. I don't think he wrote the melody. And it's from a 50s movie called The French Can-Can, which is about the Moulin Rouge as well.
And did you already know the song, or did you learn it from the movie?
Yeah, it's a famous French song. You hear it a lot. You hear it. It was funny. I'd sang it. I mean, we sang it at home as a beautiful song a lot. My mom sung it a lot. And then when I got to Paris, after cutting it and going to Paris, it's on every street corner, like when there's an accordion player, they kind of play it. It's like playing, you know, New York, New York. It's completely like they kind of, it's kind of considered a real sort of has-been. But in a weird way, when I re-released it in Paris, it created quite a stir, because people kind of realized that it's such a great song after.
Well, Rufus Wainwright, I want to thank you so much for being with us and for playing for us.
Thank you.
Rufus Wainwright's new CD is called Poses. This is Fresh Air.